I've put a lot of thought into my girlfriend's engagement ring. Did all the research, shopped around, and got lots of opinions. At first, I was planning on getting her a lab-created diamond. But after my visit to Shane Company, I changed my mind. I learned that lab-created diamonds have continually dropped in value, whereas natural diamonds have consistently maintained or increased in value over time. And all the diamonds at Shane Company are natural. What's really cool about a natural diamond is that there is no other diamond in the world like it. It's a natural wonder created by the earth billions of years ago, the oldest and rarest thing you'll ever touch. How romantic is that? And Shane Company's diamonds are conflict-free. They've always sourced their diamonds this way. So for my girlfriend's engagement ring, I chose a 1-carat natural diamond for her center stone. It's spectacular, and it's one of a kind, just like she is.
Now you have a friend in the jewelry business, Shane Company and ShaneCo.com.
All right, this is a really fun episode. They all are, right? But this one's cool. This is, they're all cool, right? Fortune Feimster is my guest, and I just adore her. And if you love her work, love her stand-up, you know, from her new special, Sweet and Salty, had it right off the top of my head, and she's got a new movie coming out that looks great with Kristen Wiig, and it's Barb and Star Go to Vista Del Mar. So if you're going to choose a location, it's just better than Palms. And she's so talented, and she's been on so many things. My God. Office Christmas Party, Yes Day, so many things. My God. The Mindy Project, Drunk History, Workaholics, you know, tons of shows, tons. And she's an angel, and she's hilarious, and she's sweet. And she's originally from North Carolina, so that's one of the things she's been on. You know what to do with this podcast. You rate, review, you subscribe, you follow, you do that. You can go to the YouTube page that bears my name. And I hope to see you there. Here comes Fortune Feimster. And I am so happy already. I need you so bad right now.
Well, I'm here for you, bud.
Oh, man. And it doesn't even matter when we run this because every 6 hours, all hell breaks loose.
Oh, no, right?
Right. You look great. You're all pinky. I like it.
Thank you. I have on a pink sweatshirt.
It's beautiful. Now, you can't bleach that. You just have to wash that with colors, light colors.
Yeah, you got to wash it and hope that it doesn't turn all the rest of your clothes pink.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't mind that. Anything, because I'm always in a darker shade of pale.
You look great.
You look better, and you know it. You know it's true.
Well, it's good to see you. What you a treat. Too. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for saying yes right away. And we did it on short notice. And I just need as many loving, fun, smart people around me as possible.
It's, you know, that's the times we're in. Any positive influx of anything is much needed.
I know. And I want to apologize to you because last time we talked on a podcast was when I was on yours and Tom Papa's podcast, which is no more because now you have, of course, Sincerely Fortune, the new podcast.
Well, so I have Sincerely Fortune, which is my podcast. And then Tom and I do the daily radio show for SiriusXM for Netflix. So we still do that every morning.
Was that the one that I was on where I was incredibly, what you didn't know was I had come off of a night of not being able to stop watching the news and then watched it again in the morning. And then when I got to you guys, it was very hard for me to dig out and be humorous. It was weird. You didn't know that backstory, but that's my hall pass.
But you know, we've been doing this show for a year and a half, and you know, some people come on and tell jokes, or whatever. But honestly, since the start of the pandemic, a lot of people would come on. A lot of comics would come on, just being like, "I don't feel funny right now," and you know, worried. And so we just sort of would commiserate with each other, and I think this time has taught us that you don't have to be entertaining or be making people laugh every second because you're just trying to take care of yourself.
Yeah. And I'm doing what you're doing, which is trying to bring solace to others as well, mm-hmm. which is why hearing conversation with people just hanging.
Yeah, that's great.
I mean, I've been doing what you've been doing. I mean, I'll have somebody, I had Bill Maher on, and it was, mm-hmm. you know, he's scared and concerned. And
yeah.
And, but then you're a festive, wonderful, happy person, and you've got so many projects. I mean, your IMDb list is longer than most people that have worked for 70 years.
Well, I guess I just say yes a lot.
That's what I was going to get to.
Yeah, maybe I should say no some here and there. I like to work. I'm a big workaholic. And
yeah.
So that's part of it. And I just started, I've been doing stand up for 13 years, but I just started doing a lot more acting in the last like 8. And I really love it. And so when I get offered opportunities, even if it's a small opportunity, I like to do it when I can, because I like to learn, and I'm trying to just get better. So I feel like you get better by doing.
That's exactly correct. And you're really good. You're really natural.
Thank you.
And really funny.
I appreciate that.
Well, you know, I can't just gloat and lap you up and down like a little happy showbiz dog. You're just really, you know, we met when at the University of Central Florida we did
a gig. Yeah, I got to open for you. It was really cool.
I got to have you as a feature opener, whatever you call it.
I know, I always confuse
right?
The two.
You were so good. I knew you were good. I'd already seen your stuff, you know.
No, it was cool to get the opportunity. I mean, you have such a big, loyal fan base, and people know you from, you know, a number of different things that you've done. So it was cool to just be in that orbit.
Well, you've been out touring your Sweet and Salty special on Netflix is really funny. And
it's you.
I mean, that's what I like to do, is be myself as much as I can. But
yeah,
sometimes I put a bravado character on, but we all do. We do, mm-hmm. you know, but you've got some just wonderful stories in it. If people haven't seen it on Netflix, they need to watch it. I mean, I'll wait. They can pause us.
Yeah, go watch right now. No, it was, yeah, it's definitely a bit of my journey and just coming from the South in a small town and not knowing who the heck I was and trying to figure it out and kind of trying on different things to see if maybe I'm this kind of person, maybe I'm that kind of person, and the funny that comes with getting it wrong, and then the triumph of finally getting it right or figuring it out, you know, and leading up to finally the aha moment of, oh, this is who I am. And it was fun to share that very personal story with people.
Well, honesty is so funny too.
Yeah. That's,
and being free is also funny, because you're sharing your delight. Because all anybody's trying to do is find out who they are, whether they know it or not.
Yeah. Yeah, and you're trying to find acceptance, like, who are my people? Where do I belong? And I have some funny, you know, my mom's a big part of my stand-up, and people seem to enjoy the stories about her because it's very relatable to their own mothers.
Right.
So anything that people can grab onto and, you know, see themselves in a part of my story is also a cool thing.
Now, you were in a debutante? What the hell?
I know. It's so Southern.
What a journey, though, for you.
Yeah, because part of my story is that my family used to have a lot of money, and they lost it all through a series of bad business things and whatnot. And then by the time I came up, we were very poor. So I had a mother that, you know, was used to the finer things in life, a father that grew up in a trailer. And then I was sort of in this middle ground world of, like, you know, not having money, but my mom wanting me to be a debutante. And so I had to, like, rub elbows with these very, you know, high society people. And I felt, I'm like, lining softball fields and picking up trash, and then going from there to, you know, eating cucumber sandwiches. It was like so bizarre. And my producer, Wanda Sykes and Paige Hurwitz, produced my special, and they were like, they've known these stories about me forever, and I never talked about them in stand up. And they were like, you have to tell that part of your story. Like, that's so unique and weird. So I'm glad I did, because it ended up being something that people were just like, you were a debutante?
I know.
I'm like, yeah, I had the white gloves and the big wedding dress. I came out to society twice.
Was it three times now, or is it twice?
Twice.
It's exhausting. Yeah. I kind of came out, and you know, it was like, oh, he's not that clean cut guy.
That was a bit jarring for people. You were so synonymous with Danny Tanner.
And then you told me you watched me growing up.
Oh yeah, for sure. I was a huge Full House fan. Still am.
I can barely remember doing it.
I'm sure. Well, y'all had a lot of episodes, and then suddenly everyone's like, Bob's dirty. Bob cusses. Bob talks about dicks and vaginas, and you're like, what?
I mean, is there a lot more to talk about?
Apparently not.
I wasn't a debutante, so I can't talk about that. But ironically, I was about to do a new special and working on all new stuff, and then the pandemic hit. So, and it was more stories. It was more stuff that I wanted to tell, because I grew up in Norfolk, Virginia, which was very racist and difficult for me, being a Jewish kid.
Oh, yeah.
Did you go through any of any persecution, or are you not really, not at that time in your life?
I mean, I didn't come out until I was 25, which it's kind of crazy in hindsight to think, because, you know, I'm sure anyone could have looked at me at 8 years old and be like, yeah, this kid's, you know, probably lesbian. You just kind of, some of us wear it a little bit more than others. But I didn't know that about my journey. So I don't know what the reaction would have been growing up if I had, like, my wife came out, she was 15 when she came out. She was in Michigan, and, you know, she experienced some things. And so I don't know what it would have been like to experience that in high school. I think it would not have been easy. So I got a little lucky in that I didn't come out until I was living in Los Angeles, and in LA, you know, nobody thinks twice about it.
Right.
And then I got through another loophole with it in regards to my home state, in that by the time I came out, I was starting to do television. And it's kind of that thing where they're like, I don't love gay people, but you're funny. And I like you on that show. So, you know, it almost bridges that gap. And I will say, to give credit to my hometown of Belmont, they have been nothing but lovely and accepting of me from day one. So I got very lucky in that I grew up in a town like I did.
Did you go through a lot of troubles in your later teenage years and through college, since you had it internalized, so you didn't let anyone know till 25, right?
Yeah.
How did you deal with it? Were you on the brink?
Well, it wasn't like I mean, it was a different time. There wasn't a lot of representation. So I genuinely did not know I was gay. Like, it wasn't like I was aware of it and was hiding it. I knew that something was different about myself. I knew that I didn't connect with guys in the way, in, you know, like, I'd meet a guy and we'd immediately high five, you know, we didn't have that, the pheromones chemistry thing. And I always knew I was angsty towards my friends, some of my friends who were girls, and I never knew where that intensity, like, what I was like, I must just really love being a best friend.
That's why you play one a lot.
Yeah. And so it more was angst, but I didn't get in trouble because I wasn't the object of affection for people. I found my validation through overachieving. I was on all the sports teams. I was on president of the clubs. I was straight A student. So that's how I got my fill of, you know, quote unquote love or whatever, attention. So I went kind of the opposite direction.
Right. And your parents were cool? Are they both around?
They are, yeah. Luckily, both my parents are still alive. They're very cool. I mean, North Carolina is fairly conservative. There's lots of liberal dots here and there. The blue is there for sure. But my mom somehow was always very liberal. So when I came out, both my parents were very accepting and very understanding. My mom just was more of the place, coming from the place of, I don't want life to be more difficult for you than it's already going to be. Oh. So hers was just from a protection place.
It's a good mom.
Yeah. And but you know, there was a couple times where she's like, are you sure?
Right.
And you're like, I'm very sure. But now she's, you know, for years she had volunteered with PFLAG, which is a parent organization that supports their gay children. And she's like a surrogate mom to a lot of people in the South whose parents have disowned them from coming out. And she's really been a very bright light for Southern gay people. And I'm real proud of her for that.
That's beautiful. Yeah. And you've hosted the GLAAD Awards, and are you involved with the organization?
I've done events for them and hosted things for them. I was supposed to host the live show last year in LA, which was a really cool event, and then obviously the pandemic hit. Right. So we shifted gears and did a virtual show that I hosted with Gina Yashere. Which was really cool. And yeah, I do stuff with them whenever I can. You know, any organization that's trying to help, you know, highlight gay representation, I appreciate as a person who's also trying to do that.
It's impossible for me to believe, but everything's impossible for me to believe, that people are still phobic about it, that parents are still, no, please don't tell me that's true, you know, that kind of attitude. I don't know. What would you tell people listening that are dealing with it and don't know how to tell their parents, and their parents wouldn't take it well?
I mean, it's certainly gotten a lot better. I think that the fact that there is more representation out there has made a huge difference, because, you know, when I was coming up, there wasn't a lot of things to look towards, you know, to see myself represented in the world. And so that, I think, sort of made a lot of people's coming out happen later. It wasn't as like embraced, and now it's a lot more embraced. Like if you talk to young kids, they'll be like, yeah, there's like 4 gay students in my class, like,
yeah,
no big deal. But you know, it definitely still exists, very much so. And I think the misconception is that once gay marriage was passed, that, oh, everything's fixed, everything's good, nothing to worry about. But it is still it's still a thing where a number of people who come out do get disowned. You know, religion plays a part of that for some people. They truly believe that if you are gay, you're going to hell, that it's a sin. And, you know, to that, you can't change someone's belief system if that's what they truly believe. You just have to live your life for you, though. You cannot live your life trying to appease your parents, appease your whoever. You have to, at the end of the day, come out because it's the best thing for you. And there is a huge sense of peace that comes with finally being who you really are.
And you project that. You project that. You have, since the moment I met you, you project just sweetness. You're like someone that I would know. I see kids when I see comedians, and that's why I have such an affinity for them. And I know you do too. You're friends with a lot of the people I'm friends with.
Yeah.
And we become 9 years old. Like I would play with you.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, it's a very, I like people when their comedy comes from, I mean, I appreciate all types of comedy, but I tend to gravitate towards silly, positive, And I like when I can just laugh with my fellow comedian friends.
Yeah.
Because we're operating on a similar wavelength of silly. And that's just a nice thing when you meet people who don't take themselves too seriously. Because LA, as you know, you've been, you know, out here in the thick of it. And, you know, people really take themselves very seriously.
Well, some of our biggest comedy stars, it's, you know, they're wonderful, but mm-hmm. it is about them. It's right. about how great they are. And that's funny if it's tongue-in-cheek and self-effacing. It's not funny if it really is how they are. That's not how you want to be.
Yeah.
You know, but I guess people that think you go to hell for what you are and what you believe in, they're already in hell because they're, you know, the idea is not to go to hell and to live a life that's true and fun, as good as fun as it can be in the world we're in.
Well, hell is not getting to be who you really are. You want to talk about, I'd rather, if you say that I'm going to go to hell for being gay, hell, there's nothing more hellish than living a lie.
Yeah.
And to not get to be who you really are, which also means you don't get to experience love, which also means you don't get to experience peace, happiness, that's hell. So you telling me I'm going to go to hell for being gay, the alternative is a lot more difficult, in my opinion.
Person casting the stone, and hopefully it's a kidney stone, because I don't wish harm on anyone, but I do wish kidney stones on some of these people.
Well, I've just never been the type of person who is occupied with what everyone else is doing.
God, I needed to talk to you today.
You know, I'm just like, I want to be happy. I want you to be happy. I want you to be happy. It is not my concern what you're doing in your own house, your own family. That's your business.
In your own
head.
As
long as you're not harming anyone.
Or yourself.
Yeah.
Although, I don't know. If you go down the conspiracy theorist trail, you're doomed. That's what I guess they don't call them conspiracy factualists.
They're theorists.
Right. So they didn't even get their degree in factualism.
No. Yeah. No. I try not to go down those rabbit holes too much because I'm always like, what? I don't understand.
I know. I'm apparently Jewish, so I have lasers that I can shoot. I don't know. There's some new vernacular that I can't keep up with.
You know, who can?
I got lucky. I married somebody very centered, very grounded.
That's nice.
Good family. And you got lucky, it sounds like, because if she knew who she was at 15 and came out at 15, that means I would assume that she's a really centered person.
Oh, very much so. Yeah, I met Jacqueline. She's my wife now. We got married.
Wait a second, you're gay?
Yeah, I know.
Oh, you know, I haven't been listening.
I just came out for a third time.
Oh my God, I got to run this back and listen to it.
Oh, we got married in the pandemic, which is an interesting thing, but very cool.
How'd you get married? I know you've talked about it a lot, but where was it?
We've been together 5.5 years, engaged for 2.5, and we were.
Did I meet her? Did she come to that Nashville Squares thing?
I'm trying to think. You might.
I don't know if she.
You might have met her one time, but
maybe
I don't,
out in the comedy world somewhere.
But she's very grounded.
I remember hitting on her.
And she appreciates that.
Yeah, see, I can't tell. I still don't think that should be a reason why I can't hit on someone. If we know that I'm kidding. Because I'm married.
It should be more reason you get to hit on them.
I think so.
She's like Midwest. She's a Midwest girl via Michigan and Chicago. And she's very salt of the earth and. So we just decided let's just do it. What are we waiting on? And we did it in Malibu. It was before the numbers had really spiked. We only had 5 of our close friends, and we zoomed.
I was wondering why I wasn't invited.
I know. Even our families weren't there. We zoomed them. So you just
wait, Bob. I'm really sorry. You're an acquaintance, kind of.
What if it was our 5 friends and Bob? Like, I told y'all I love Full House. Bob is
I love Full House, and I opened for him a long time ago.
You could have married us. I'm sad I didn't think
I
of
actually
that.
did marry a couple.
Oh, yeah?
And they're still together.
I got
my license online.
Yeah. So you went through a real hard training to
Oh, it was difficult. It was almost like being a congressperson. I spent no time on it. We got to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
In 1929, the Shane family opened our first jewelry store. Even then, we were intent on being different. We wanted to be more than a jeweler. We wanted to be a friend. Our intentions haven't changed. When you visit Shane Company, you're treated like a friend, and your purchases come with the best warranty in the industry. You can be assured we'll always be here for you. Most jewelers will charge you for their warranty. Our warranty is free for a lifetime and even covers the center stone. We're able to offer you an unparalleled warranty because of the quality of our jewelry. Whether it's an engagement ring, a wedding band, a stunning necklace, earrings, or a bracelet, the structure and design of our jewelry ensures it will last a lifetime because that's what a friend would do. Now you have a friend in the jewelry business. Shane Company and ShaneCo.com.
All right, we're back. This is what I love podcasts.
We've been manscaped.
Maybe we bought a mattress or went to therapy. I don't know.
Look how smooth our skin is.
Oh, my God. You look so ravishing. You have a glow about you. Honest to God.
It's the ring light.
Well, I don't have one. I have a desk light. But the ring light, see, if you wear glasses, don't you hate that when you're watching the news and you
just see
the ring light in people's eyes.
Yeah, for sure.
I just want to get in there and put a filter on it.
You know? I didn't have one for a long time. And then 11 months into quarantine, you go, I guess I should get a ring light. I guess I should have a microphone. I don't think we're going anywhere for a minute.
And you're doing so many projects. So you're on Zooms all the time, I would imagine.
Yeah. We do our radio show Monday through Thursday. So that's every morning, and then I'm doing a new show for Netflix called the Netflix After Party. It's with David Spade and London Hughes, and sometimes we have to do some stuff from home, but we've been going in studio.
How much fun is that?
It's really cool. I mean, it's cool because I just am appreciative of being in the Netflix family. I mean, they have 200 million subscribers now. It's pretty insane.
Yeah.
But we get to interview all the cast of their like big shows. And so I'm sitting here on my couch like everybody else watching these shows. So it's cool to get to chat with people. And having been in a pandemic where you can't really see friends and we haven't seen our families in a long time, because we go in, there's just a few of us, but most people Zoom in on that show. So just getting to connect with people feels like a treat right now.
I did a couple of those, and it would always, there's always Ken Jeong is always there, and Joel McHale is always there.
Yep.
or Nikki Glaser. So I would be there, and it'd be fun. It's like you feel like, wow, mm-hmm. You're the person I just saw in the past 6 months.
Yeah. Well, because, you know, there was a good chunk of time where everything shut down and you were like, when are we going to get to work again? When are we going to get to film again? And how can we do it safely? And so to get to work at all right now feels like a real blessing because it's something I definitely don't take for granted anymore.
And you got a movie you wrote, right? So
I've written a couple movies, but they're still in that, you know, development. I sold two movies to Amblin, and then we have another.
But that's not small, by the way.
That's pretty cool. And when Steven Spielberg gives you the thumbs up that he wants, that they want to buy something, it's a pretty awesome thing. And then to have sold two, it's cool. But you know, to make a movie is a lot of work, and it takes a lot of rewrites and a lot, they don't want to make anything that's not ready, and you don't want to put anything out that's not ready.
No. And when you see a movie that's not ready, you go, oh, why didn't they fix that?
Exactly. So we're in that development process, right now, but you know, I have a couple guys I write with, and we just throw things out to each other and see what makes us laugh. And you know, hopefully we can get one of these movies going.
You will. You will. There's no way you won't. I'm telling you. No, I'm telling you the truth. You have it.
Oh, thank you.
You know this. You do.
Tell Hollywood that.
Well, you know, isn't that a gross term, Hollywood?
Tell Hollywood.
All the people in the Hollywood do this. I've gone to Hollywood a couple of times. I have some friends there. I've seen the pee on the Walk of Fame.
Yep,
you know?
Yep.
I mean, I go there when I need to. If I'm filming in the town.
Yeah, but that's it.
Now Barb and Star go to Vista Del Mar.
Barb and Star go to Vista Del Mar. It's
far from either of us.
I know. It's quite a title. I'm telling. So this movie is coming out February 12th on video on demand. It's Kristen Wiig and Annie Mumolo. They wrote Bridesmaids together, and they wrote this one. And even though I have a small part in it, but I am promoting the heck out of it because I want people to watch this film because it is, I watched it having not seen a lot of the scenes and I was crying laughing, and a movie hasn't done that for me in a while because
right.
A lot of comedies we're seeing lately, even they are taking themselves too seriously.
Yeah.
You know, this Hollywood that we talk about they're not letting comedians just be bonkers. They've been reeled in.
Well, it's the insiders club. It's like the too hip for school.
Exactly.
People.
Yeah.
And you're not like that. And the movie, I watched the trailer and I can't wait to see it. And it just looks, it doesn't look like a long sketch. It looks like these developed unusual, silly characters who we kind of know. And Kristen's always been able to do those characters. On SNL, she did them constantly.
Yeah. Well, I'm grateful that someone like her, who's gotten so famous, because sometimes, again, when comedians become very famous, they then start wanting to do these Oscar-type things. They really start focusing on the more serious stuff. And I really appreciate that someone at her level is like, no, I want to play this woman from the Midwest with my friend and be silly and have guys in a bar sing about boobs. I mean, it's like the movie's so insane and it's so funny. And I'm so excited for people to watch it because I just want I want all of us to be able to make more movies like this where you just laugh.
Yeah. I'm working on one right now with somebody. I directed the movie Dirty Work years ago with Norm.
Mm-hmm.
I can't allude to anything, but we need comedies. We need to make people laugh really hard. This movie, your wig alone is,
it's my hair. They straightened it out.
They did.
They straightened out my hair and, with the straightener and they gave me bangs. I didn't even know my hair could do that.
It's adorable.
Thank you.
You look like you're having a blast. Everybody looks like they are in that movie.
Well, our little part is that the Barb and Star, who are Kristen and Annie, they are members of a talking club. And the whole club is just, you pull out a topic and you talk about it.
It's not a book club. It's not a movie club. It's not a game night.
A talking club. So if that tells you anything about the ridiculousness of this movie, and the movie has like an evil person that's trying to destroy people. I mean, there's so many things happening, and you'll just really laugh, and that's what we need right now.
So much. And I do think, as a lot of people in Hollywood are saying, comedy's going to be king.
Yeah.
Have you been hearing that one?
Comedy's king.
Oh, 2021, 22.
Yeah.
Comedy is king.
And then, what's that?
No, please.
Well, I was going to say there. Then I'm doing a family movie coming out on Netflix called Yes Day. And it stars Jennifer Garner. And a really great cast. They're a family that has to say yes to everything for the entire day. So it really The young ones will love this movie so much. It's really cute and really fun.
Is it like a magical spell, or is it something they're challenged to do?
They're challenged to do. It's very grounded in real life. This family that's just, you know, gotten consumed with work and school and this and that, that the mom, Jennifer's character, has become too uptight. She's kind of lost her way. And so they come up with this idea that whoever in the family has an idea of what the family has to do it together, no phones, and you have to say yes. So it's really cute what they end up, some real fun adventures they end up going on.
What a great premise. I mean, it's the first rule of improv, and you're a groundling, for God's sakes. I did the Groundlings for a couple of years. I took the classes.
Yeah. I just did it through the Sunday, up until a year and a half of the Sunday company, and then that was it for me. I was there about 6 or 7 years.
Did you try, you had to have tried out for Saturday Night Live, I would imagine, over the years.
I did. They flew me out to New York twice to test. This was 2009 and 2010, two summers back to back, and at the time, you know, I couldn't get a job to save my life. People didn't know what to do with me. I was considered different, which was not, at the time, considered a positive thing. And so I...
That's unbelievable.
They had me try out, and, you know, there were a lot of people there really rooting for me and really wanting me to get it, and it just didn't happen. I came back the next summer, so obviously they were intrigued enough.
Yeah,
to bring me back. And then they also saw me perform at the Groundlings with my cast. They came to see all of us.
Right.
And so I performed for them, you know, 3 different times. But it just, for whatever reason, it wasn't my path. It was heartbreaking at the time, because you think, oh, this could be my big break. This could, I guess, because I had not, in 2009, I had not been on TV yet. My
last Comic Standing was in 2010.
2010, yeah.
Right.
And so you just want so bad for someone to finally see it and to get it. And I grew up on SNL. I mean, every season I was hooked. I would memorize the sketches and perform them for my friends at school. And so that, you know, as stand-up, people are always like, who did you watch? I'm like, no, I watched SNL. I was the character person.
Yeah.
And it didn't happen. So you have to kind of shift your dreams. You go, well, you know, that was a hard no, but for whatever reason it wasn't my path, and what's my next dream.
I auditioned, I think, 4 or 5 times.
Oh,
and when you look at the reel, they, I don't know how they get the footage, but they've been releasing it, and you'll see Jim Carrey's reel, you know, different people that, and he was amazing. I mean, he's Jim Carrey, and he always was. He opened for me when he was 17 in Toronto.
Wow, yeah.
And he was, you know, your talent takes 1 second to spot.
For sure.
That's going to be a meteor, you know. And they didn't pass him, which is, you know, so you're with a lot of greats that have not been on.
Yeah. I mean, just to get to do it was pretty special. I mean, you know, you go out there and you do it on their stage, and Lauren watches you. I think Seth Meyers was the head writer then. And you walk those halls, you get makeup from their team. I mean, it's just to get to do that part was a thing that not a lot of people get to do. So I always treasure that experience. It was nerve-wracking though. My first audition, I only had, I think I got a call at like 2 in the afternoon, and I had to be on a plane at 9 that night, and I auditioned the next
morning. I've heard this from a few people. Get on the plane tomorrow, and I just had John Lovitz on the podcast, and we talked about it, his process. Some people didn't even want to do the show, and they're the ones that got it.
Yeah. Well, the irony too is, So when I auditioned, it was kind of early on in my extensive Groundlings training. And so by the time I was at the height of my skill with sketch comedy, it was probably 2011. So I didn't even get to show them because when you do Sunday Company with the Groundlings, it's like boot camp for sketch comedy. I hadn't even gone through that yet. So what I knew in 2009 versus what I knew at the end of 2011 was like night and day. But then I got to be on Chelsea Lately, and I did characters and sketches for them constantly.
Yeah. That was actually a fun show.
Yeah, it was fun. It was really fun, and it was I got that at the beginning of 2011, and it was a show at the time that was really popular and kind of the thing a lot of people watched before they went to bed. So it ended up being a really great thing for me. Chelsea was the first person after all those years of being out here and people not knowing what to do with me and not knowing how to make me being different work for them. She like right away was like, yes, I get you. And I want you on the show. And that it changed everything for me.
But it's obvious though. I mean, you fit in with all the people that we all love that are in all these comedies that have a face that you just know has that they're not faking that they have love. You know, you look at a Jason Sudeikis or a Paul Rudd or Kristen Wiig or, mm-hmm. I mean, so many people you just go, they're real about what they're doing.
Yeah.
And they're fresh faced about it, you know, and it never goes away. I mean, they'll be older and they'll be like that.
Yeah. Well, I think it's because you're finally getting to do what you love, and you're thankfully able to pay the bills by doing it. So every day that I get to work, I'm like, I'm pretty happy because I'm getting to do the thing I tried for years to get to do, and I'm finally doing it. And it's enjoyable. It makes you laugh and it makes other people laugh. I mean, it doesn't get much better than that.
No. Now, Last Comic Standing was a competition. Was mm-hmm. that an angst-ridden time for you, or did you enjoy that also? Because it was a kind of a big deal to be on TV for you, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it was my TV debut, and I didn't want to do it at first because right. I did not want to be on a reality show because there were a few seasons where they all had to live in a house together. And they did all these competitions. And I was like, they reached out to me to do it because I knew Paige Hurwitz from the comedy scene and doing this show at ACT Bar a lot. And she asked me if I wanted to audition. And I was like, no way. I'm not living in a house with a bunch of comedians. They're all crazy. And she was like, no, this season is strictly stand-up. It is you on a stage telling jokes. I was like, oh, that is cool. I like that. I just didn't want to start my career in a way where I was the clown trying to, like, win a challenge.
You know? It's tap dancing.
And no shade towards anyone who's done that. We it's really propelled a lot of careers for different people starting that way. And it just wasn't what I wanted at the time. And, I did it, but I was only 2.5 years in the stand up when I did it. Cause I started sketch and improv a lot earlier.
How old were you when you started, when you knew you wanted to be a performer and have dreams toward, dare I say, show business or entertainment?
Well, I did theater in college.
Right.
But I was really bad at it.
What plays did you do?
Well, I was at a school. My director at the time did these really obscure plays, never any comedies. So it was like Shakespeare. It was like some bizarre play you'd never heard of. So I just didn't thrive because it wasn't what I do. I didn't know how to.
What play of Shakespeare's did you do?
The Tempest. I played Stefano, the drunk.
So that was kind of cool.
Yeah, that was cool. But
you were on Drunk History. Is that where you drew from?
I did. I had terrible stage fright in college, like to the point where I stepped on stage and I wanted to vomit everywhere. I was unbelievably frightened, and I could not bridge the gap between being very comfortable in life and happy and fun. And as soon as I stepped on that stage, it was like a deer in headlights. And the thing that finally made me get over that was improv. Once I moved to Los Angeles, I started taking improv when I was 24, and it taught me the tools to get myself out of, if, you know, because my fear with theater was that I would forget my lines or not know what to do, like, and I would get frozen by that fear, and improv made me free. It was like, you will figure this out no matter what. And it got rid of my stage fright like almost like a potion. So crazy.
I think everyone should take improv classes because it's so positive. It's mm-hmm. it has there's a real therapeutic
yeah.
bent to it.
It's great. And I had amazing training at the Groundlings. So even though I was new at stand-up, I had this training from Groundlings and acting and improv. So it helped me be comfortable on stage. So that's why a lot of people didn't know when I was doing Last Comic Standing that I was so new, because I had all those years prior to learning stand-up, learning how to be comfortable on stage. And it was the perfect amount of time for me. I was in 4 episodes. I went to the semifinals. And honestly, if people to this day are like, you should have kept going, I'm like, if I had kept going, I would have had no jokes. I didn't have enough material. So it was the perfect.
And you're not a thief, which we know who, and we know who they are.
Well, I only know how to tell my stories, and I'm not an observational comic or political comic. I tell stories.
Yeah.
And so I had not had time at that time to mine my stories. And so, you know, I didn't overstay my welcome there. I gave people a little taste, a little intro of me. It was enough to make people go, huh, I want to know more about her, but it then gave me time to grow my act.
You poured so much of yourself into your last special. Do you, does it make you want to get back out there more to work on new stuff? Or are you've got a lot on your plate, acting wise, writing wise, developing wise, and performing on screen and big and small and small screen, because mm-hmm. the big screen is kind of reduced at
yeah,
the moment.
Exactly.
But it won't be, because for some reason AMC stock went up, but which we want that to happen. But what do you miss stand-up?
I definitely miss it. I mean, I've always put my hands in a lot of things. I've always sort of overdone it. I definitely, there are times when I go, why don't you just focus more on this one thing? You'd be, you know, why do you got to do it all? But I just always love, I there's nothing I don't want to do. So I feel like sometimes my stand-up suffers because I'm busy acting, I'm busy, you know, writing, developing, doing radio, doing whatever, that I'm not at the club every night, you know, in normal times. But for me, I almost need a deadline. Like the student in me goes, you got a test on, you know, October 23rd or whatever, and you have 6 months to study for it. And that's what gets my stand up really going.
I think we're all that way.
Yeah. So I almost need like a special looming over my head, but right as of the moment, I have like maybe 20 minutes, and I really haven't been writing stand up because I kind of just let myself be. But now I'm the thing inside of all of us comedians that goes, okay, it's time, it's starting to bubble up.
And as you feel that, oh, there's a vaccine, oh, so people are going to be, oh, so that would mean the fall and things
exactly.
like that. So I started to book dates in the fall that I hope I can keep.
Same.
Other things, and we move our schedules, but we want to be there for the people because they'll be more than ever excited to see you when you're back out.
Yeah.
And that makes you want to do it more, and you go, wait a minute, I'm good at this.
Mm-hmm.
I can make people laugh live, and then I can go home, and you'll still be doing any podcast you want to do.
Yeah.
But as far as film goes, you just make it work, board it around it.
Yeah. I think the challenge for me is, you know, I shared such a personal story list last time. Now I'm like, what do I want to talk about? What do I want to say? What do I want people to know? And what do I want to share? So I'm kind of at those crossroads of not knowing where to begin. But that's what we all have to do when our last act's done and the new one's coming forth.
It's a blank easel.
Yeah.
And that I found myself much more now leaving notes. I used to write it all down in a journal, the Seinfeld way, mm-hmm. you know, and now it's all, I just roll it on the iPhone. And now I've been putting more stuff in lately. It's like, okay, I'm going to talk about that and this, because everybody's going to come out of the gate and everybody's going to talk about the pandemic. And right. if you talk about politics, you can't play everywhere.
Right.
And I'm tired of it.
I'm such, so tired of it too.
Oh my God. Do you watch the news?
I used to watch the news very regularly. And in the last couple of years, it was too much. It was so divided and so negative that I had to stop. I started paying attention again in the last, you know, during this last election cycle, because there was a lot to consume and figure out. But I haven't thought one second about politics since January 20th, and I'm just taking another little hiatus from it.
I needed to hear this so bad because it is physically debilitating.
Yeah, it's just not a you know, you want to pay attention because you want to be, you know, proactive and you want to hold your people accountable. But yeah, also got to take care of your own mental health. And sometimes, you know, politics is so this team or that team, and it's the common ground is becoming less and less. And that, to me, that bums me out because, you know, even though I'm obviously a liberal and I lean that way, I'm still Southern. I have plenty of friends who lean the other way.
Same.
And I don't want to not be able to coexist and have respect for each other. So it's like, how do we find that common ground again?
I know. And people are doing what they do in grade school. Well, they're not doing it, so I'm not doing it.
Yeah.
How are you going to get common ground? It's like that. It's 7 years old.
Everybody wants to live in their bubbles, and I don't want that.
I think I'm going to make up my own news source.
Yeah.
Just different things that have to do with, you know, I got a colonoscopy. That's big story tonight.
Yep.
Special bulletin.
A lot of people tuning in for that.
Who wouldn't? I mean, you know, I've got the cameras. There's a GoPro.
Bob's opening up, literally.
I'm going to start this special face down. And at the very end, I rise. We're going to take one more quick break. And then it'll be for something good, like a mattress that I could lie on and then get a colonoscopy.
Boom.
I'm Otis Gyre, and where I'm from, we don't do nice bedtime stories. If that's what you were expecting, you're in the wrong place. However, if it's terrifying tales you're after, well then, I've got just the thing for you. Here on Scary Stories Told in the Dark, we bring you immersive original tales about malicious monsters, deadly deals with demons, and the gruesomely grotesque. With short stories from published horror authors to accomplished indie creepypasta authors, which are brought to life through our eerily haunting sound design and narration from yours truly, you're guaranteed to hear the tales that make your skin crawl and your palms sweat. So dive into the cosmically creepy with us by subscribing to Scary Stories Told in the Dark on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Get comfortable. Settle in. Turn off the lights, if you dare. Your night is about to get a whole lot darker.
Okay, we're back. I picked great edit points. You know, you have so much that you don't know, and I already know what's going to happen for you. I know.
Oh, yeah?
It. Yeah. I mean, and people know because they can sense someone that does this not to be a star, but does it because they want to make people laugh or they want to do good work.
Yeah.
And you're just like an incredibly lovable person.
Oh, thank you. Well, I genuinely get great joy out of making people happy and seeing people laugh. It's, I mean, that's why we all, you know, like we do, a lot of us do the stand up and go on tour because we want that feedback, that, that laughter in that room. It does as much for us as it does for the audience.
And the same thing happens when you're acting in something, you get that interchange. What's mm-hmm. been your best experience? You would say film or television, what stands out?
Gosh, I've had some really special experiences. I mean, Chelsea obviously was significant for me in that it gave me my break. The Mindy Project was significant for me and Mindy because she really started my acting career. Like that was, I was doing stuff before her, but that really cemented me in the acting world as far as getting opportunities. And I really appreciated that. And then, from the Mindy, before I got the Mindy Project, I did a Tina Fey pilot, and she is someone I definitely idolized. And
She's a miracle.
Yeah, and then that pilot didn't go, and then I had her ear for a minute, and I pitched her a sitcom.
You physically, you actually had
her ear, and I said, then she'd always want this back. You better listen to my pitch.
And it better get picked up or you don't get your ear back.
So I pitched her sort of a sitcom version of my life, and we sold it to ABC and shot the pilot for that. And that, for me, was one of the most special experiences I've had because, unfortunately, it didn't get picked up. But I got to see, it was called Family Fortune. I saw my name everywhere on golf carts. Annie Potts played my mom. John Carroll Lynch played my dad. Just these amazing actors,
right,
were lifting up my script, my words, and acting with me. And Tina was amazing. It was such a cool experience. The no of that was so devastating, but to just have gotten a taste of that was really special for me.
I had something like that I loved. It was I had a couple of them, but there was one called Raising Dad, mm-hmm. and Jonathan Katz wrote it. It was based on his life with, mm-hmm. and Norman Steinberg also produced and wrote. He wrote on Blazing Saddles, and he wrote My Favorite Year. And my daughters on the show were Brie Larson and Kat Dennings.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
And Megan
awesome, yeah.
Good was Kat's girlfriend, and mm-hmm. Jerry Adler from The Sopranos was my dad. So it was this amazing cast, and mm-hmm. it did well. We did 24 episodes, uh-huh. and it did only 24, and it did well in England.
Oh.
I was like, oh, we're a hit in England.
Yeah.
So they're just going to run those 24 for 9 seasons. That'll be
hilarious.
Good.
You never know why things get picked up or don't get picked up, why things work or don't work. Would this have happened if we had more time? It's a very fickle business. And I have had to learn to not be so precious about things. You try to do good work and you try to pick good projects, but you almost have to have this mentality of like, if this works, great. If it doesn't, on to the next.
And as you get older, it gets even, for me, it's like they said, no, I went, okay. I used to, during my 20s, I'd be depressed for all my 20s.
Yeah.
Literally, I'd be at the Comedy Store for 8 years. It was no. And I was just mm-hmm. thought, but then I realized, what am I doing? It makes no sense. You're not going to get forward if you're clinging on to everything so preciously, even if it is. It sounds like, is there any way to get that pilot made now? The one that,
I don't know. I don't know. People have asked me that and I have no idea, but
Now's the time.
I did feel like it was a little bit before its time, because that was about 6 years ago. But I remember when I was so devastated, and Annie Potts was like, "Let's go get a drink," and you know, she's a legend. She's been doing this forever, designing women and all those movies. And, you know, she's, I'm just sitting there like a mess. And she's like, it's fine. You know, you'll be fine. And she's right. You know, you move on and you find the next thing. I mean, maybe there will be some, or if it's not that show, I still have my story.
Right.
I can tell my version of the story in a different way. So maybe it wasn't meant to be on that platform or in that sitcom way. Maybe it's meant to be a darker comedy or this or, you know, whatever version of it.
Or just more real with where you're headed. And maybe Netflix is the key because you're part of the family.
Yeah, no, you never know. So it's up to me. That's the part about developing and being a writer is it feels like homework. So you're like, oh, I gotta do my homework if I want.
I just spent months writing a screenplay, and once it's done, it's like, what do I do today?
Yeah.
I turned in my homework. I'm exhausted. But then something else hits your desk. Are you home? When you're home now during quarantine, when you're going in and you're filming some right now, right? Is it a couple days a week?
It's once a week, yeah. And then
COVID restrictions are real heavy, right?
They're real heavy. And I'm doing a recurring role on Kenan Thompson's new sitcom. And that's been like once a week as well here and there.
He's an angel.
He's amazing.
Yeah,
so,
he's another one. Another adorable person.
Yeah, he exudes positivity. And right. I like being in his presence as well. And yeah, you like to see things happen for good people. And he's lovely. And but everybody, all these sets are taking it very seriously. You get tested a lot. You can't be around. There's zones and you can't, anybody in this zone can't be anywhere near this zone. And face, you know, the actors have to be exposed at a certain point, but they take it very seriously.
I went to a point where I just said, I'll do my own makeup. You know, I'll just do it because you need the mask and the face shield. Mm-hmm. And I just, you know, and I've done a few of them, and I was asked to do an indie film recently, and I had to say no because they just don't have the budget, because real productions are putting a third of their budget into COVID precautions.
Yeah. And that's why a lot of stuff hasn't gotten off the ground, because you have to spend a lot of, like you said, a lot of chunk of money on testing and protocols and zoning. And but, you know, some people have a little bit more wiggle room to do that. But I've had to turn down things too, because you have like to shoot one episode of a thing. Like in Canada, you have to go in quarantine for 2 weeks, and then I just can't because of other responsibilities. So, but that's all right. You know, it's someone who really needs the work who can do that. You hope that they get that opportunity. And we're all trying to make decisions that we have to work, we have to pay our bills, but you want to be safe. And so you really grapple with the, like, is this worth it? Because I need to take care of myself first and my health first.
100%. And I'm thinking that more and more. I've got a wife and 3 daughters and probably kids I don't know about. I mean, you could be my kid. I've been through North Carolina 42 years ago.
Come on now, you and Ginge. My mom, Ginger.
Your mom's a Ginger.
You don't even remember her.
No, well, you know, it was a different time. You know, I was a different man. No, I couldn't have been it because I was married and faithful at that time. At that time.
At that time.
As I recall. So what is your dream right now would be, one, you're enjoying time being married, and you're binging on some shows, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I always wanted to work, but I always wanted to have peace and happiness in my home.
Right.
I came from divorced parents, and there wasn't a lot of peace at times. And so my career goals have always been lofty, but the just as significant was I gotta have peace in my home. I have to want to come home. I don't want to be finding ways to want to leave. And so this pandemic has really I think, highlighted for a lot of people what your home life is like. Is it you find out right away if this person that you're with is a good fit because you're with each other all day, every day. And thank God I have a good one. And we have, you know, we've just sort of, it's just kind of been us for the last, she hasn't seen her family in over a year. And we like each other's company still. And yeah, we sit on the couch and watch shows and play. We do puzzles now. We were never puzzles. Those people.
That's like a writer friend of mine would always say, when you go through a breakup, you would always say, do a puzzle with a friend. You know, oh. It was like a Hallmark card.
Yeah.
You know? What kind of puzzles? Is it like a lighthouse? Is it?
Cause it's that's all like kinds. She finds them at like Marshall's for like 10 bucks.
She goes into Marshall's.
Yeah. I mean, here and there, or she'll, you know, order them on Amazon or something, but she's a big germaphobe, so she doesn't leave a lot.
Right.
So I'm trying to be responsible out of respect for her.
Of course.
And because you should be. But we've definitely taken it very seriously, you know, so that's why going back to work, you go, like over the holidays, we didn't see anybody for like almost 4 weeks. And then you go, oh my God, am I really about to go back to work? It felt so, you feel so exposed.
Yeah.
But luckily I'm, you know, the people I work with are also taking it very seriously. So that helps.
Makes me happy. You really do need an A team of people in order to go back to work comfortably.
Yeah,
you can't really do your stuff. Did you watch like The Queen's Gambit? Did you see that
one? Yeah.
Did you watch The Undoing? Everybody watched The Undoing.
I did, yes.
Kind of had to. It was just...
Yeah, all those shows. We're now watching Your Honor. It's really intense.
Yeah. I mean, who wouldn't do that for their kid? I wouldn't.
I know. I kept going, he should just turn his kid in.
I mean, I think it's time to just go to the FBI with your kid.
I think he should give up his kid now.
Yeah, but he's we can't tell people in case they haven't watched it, but Bryan Cranston, he's an anomaly. He's so talented funny and great.
That's what's so funny is that he is so funny. You know, a lot of people obviously know him from Malcolm in the Middle as well, but he's taken on all these serious, stressful roles like in this last part of his career. And I go, I'm so stressed out for him in all these shows. And I'm like, I hope he goes on walks or, you know, to take care of himself.
He's so sweet.
So stressful.
I hope he's eating right.
Him and the what was the meth show?
Oh, Breaking Bad.
Breaking Bad.
I've heard him recently talk, and he sounds incredibly healthy about all of it and talks in the same way that you're talking, which is he just loves it. And someone asked,
cool,
what about the success that you've had? And you've had so many variances of roles, and he, you can't fake it. He's not that kind of person. He's just appreciative.
Yeah.
And he just loves it. And that's the gift of being lucky enough to be able to make a living doing something like this. And, you know, if I was a computer wizard, if I could, I would actually hack into the world and fix it. But if it was something else that I really loved, you know, there are people that love the law, that love being a lawyer.
Yeah. I think at one point I thought I might be a lawyer, and then I started.
Really?
Yeah. Because I just, for some reason in my, you know, naive brain back in the day, thought it was just talking. And then when I realized you had to learn cases and statutes, and I was like, I gotta learn the law. No, thank you.
But you were a good student, right? You were like a straight A student.
Mm-hmm.
And what college was it?
Peace College. It was a women's college. So I graduated summa cum laude, but it was a small college.
That's still a significant thing.
But the beauty of it is that the teachers were very involved. Like, if you didn't come to class, they would ask. Like, you know, most colleges, your professor has no idea if you were there. They don't know. Some of them don't even know your name. I mean, but I was in a class with like 20 women. And so my professors would see me in the lunch hall and be like, where were you? You know, and I go, oh, sorry. You know, so they held you accountable. So it made you want to show up and do the work. And I really appreciate the time that I had there, because I had some really wonderful professors looking out for me and showing me the importance of showing up and doing the work.
Did they know that you were talented in the entertainment way, in the comedic way?
I think that they knew that I was, they saw me entertain, like, obviously.
In the plays, right?
Not even in the plays. I held court, you know, making people laugh in life better than I did on stage.
Right.
So they knew that people listened to me. And I remember my senior year, a professor approached me and she was like, you need to take my leadership class. You are a leader. And I was like, I know I'm not a leader. So she's like, yes, you are. People listen to you. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to teach you how to hone that skill. And I was like, wow. And she really impressed me with her, just like, here's what you need, and I'm going to teach you how to do it, and you need to take my class. And I was like, all right. And I ended up doing it. And, you know, she really did teach me, because I didn't think of myself as a leader or as someone that people would listen to. And she really opened that door for me.
Isn't that amazing? I had a couple teachers like that.
Mm-hmm.
I was pre-med for 6 months at Temple University. Wow. And I would have graduated summa cum quietly. I would have not loud. That's not even a pun. I don't know what that is. I'll be funny in 2023.
Made me laugh.
Oh, because you're so nice and it's lonely out here. But I then went to film school. I moved over to the film department. And mm-hmm. then I started going from getting D's and C's in biology and chemistry to A's in making films. And then I went, and then I did stand up and everything. So it kind of finds us.
Well, listen, if I had majored in science or math, I would have been D's and C's, 100%. It was not my strong suit.
You would have been a good psychologist, though.
Maybe. And I mean, I never knew what I wanted to do. So I didn't even know. I kind of like followed life. And I think my path found me.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, once I realized that I could do comedy, it was like no stopping me. Once you find the thing that sets whatever inside of you, like, sparks that thing. I mean, I wish that for everybody, that they could find the thing that makes them feel a certain way, that they are like, I'll do whatever I have to do to be able to do this thing because I love it so much.
I'm the same way. And I feel bad for some people that are listening right now that are unrequited, that mm-hmm. never either had the opportunity to follow that thing because they were constrained by life circumstances, or they just, and I always tell people, it's not too late.
Mm-mm.
It doesn't, I mean, as far as our business goes, Rodney Dangerfield mm-hmm. wasn't in Caddyshack till he was 58.
Yeah.
And so it just doesn't matter. Some actors you don't even see start working till they're in their 60s, 70s. Mm-hmm. It's really weird. It's like, boy, he's in everything. She's in everything. It's like, but they're 68 and they just started.
Yeah.
So.
And there's all different kinds of things. I mean, you know, whatever. I've been hearing stories from people, you know, my wife just, you know, back in school because she realizes now she wants to do this. And, you know, it isn't too late. I know there are certain, you know, some people are in circumstances that, you know, with kids, I know it's hard, finances. Sometimes you can't pivot as easily.
Yeah, you can't.
I was lucky that I found my passion at 24, you know, and I didn't have, and I was broke. You know, I had roommates forever and I didn't know how I was going to pay the bills. But when you're 24, when you're through, you know, 29, 30, you can do that. If you don't have kids and the responsibilities, you can. But I also was watching my friends at home in North Carolina buying houses and starting families and having jobs and having nice cars. And I was there with my two roommates and not knowing how I was going to pay the bills the next month. But I knew that there was nothing else I wanted to do. And nothing else was going to make me feel the way that comedy did.
Well, it's just going to get more and more. And I'm excited to watch all the wonderful things that you do.
Well, I appreciate that. I've had such joy watching you over the years, and so it's such a treat to.
You mean on TV or just outside my house or
both? I thought that was you.
I actually have security camera footage. It's like Homeland over here now.
Yeah, you just see the top of my curls.
You actually came right from work from Mar Vista from shooting that. So you had your little cute little bangs.
My bangs.
I can't wait to see that.
So same. I can't wait for you to see it too. I hope it makes you laugh.
Oh, like, it will. I'm in already. I bought the premise, bought the bit, bought the whole deal.
Yes.
Well, Fortune, thanks for coming here.
Bob, anytime. Thank you for having me.
I needed to talk to you so bad. You're such a positive, wonderful, fun, loving person.
Well, thank you. It was so nice to talk to you and connect with you and have a positive, lovely conversation. You have kicked off my weekend of puzzles in a very good light.
May you not be missing a piece, because that has happened. That's happened.
That's the worst. So let's hope this is a good one.
I'll say a prayer. It's going to be good. It's going to be good. And congrats on your marriage. Really happy for you. Really happy.
Thank you. I'm happy for you. I'm glad you got a good one too.
I do. It took a long time.
Yeah.
And finally got one that didn't do me wrong.
There you go.
Although my ex-wife is a very lovely person, but we've been divorced for 23 years or something.
Wow,
so so that was a lot of stuff that I'll tell you about another time.
Good.
We'll be in a bar celebrating because we're outside and you're finishing a project and I am. And we'll double date.
There you go. I'd love that.
I would love that.
That would be awesome.
All right. Well, then it's tentative.
All right. Put a pin in it. Let's
Lots
get
of
our
love.
Vaccines.
Lots of thanks. Love, Fortune.
Thanks, Bob. You too.
Okay. Have fun.
Bye, bud.
Bye. Well, Fortune Feimster, how do you not love her? I just adore her so much. You don't have to answer me for that. It was not a question. That was rhetorical. I think that's the word. Anyway, you want to check out her Netflix special, which is Sweet and Salty. If you haven't seen it, it really gives you an idea of who she is and what kind of person she is. And she's funny as hell and so sweet. And her silliness is something that draws me to her a lot. And Barb and Star go to Vista Del Mar. You want to see that movie. She says it's a small part, but... as they say, there are no small parts unless I'm naked in front of a mirror. What? Why would I do that? I don't know. It didn't make sense. Watch everything, Fortune Feimster. She is just charming and funny and takes the edge off. Just makes life a little bit easier. You want to rate, review, and subscribe. You want to subscribe. You can download. How many downloads do you have on your podcast? They ask that. Or follow me if you're on Spotify, follow. And if you're on Apple, subscribe. And then there's Stitcher and Twitter and Donner and Blitzen. You can get it. You get it anywhere. So you can also call that phone number up in the upper corner there in the description of the podcast. And I'll call you guys sometime. I miss talking to you. I'll be giving you a call soon. And just wishing you well. I'm wishing you health as we get through this 2021 and it gets better on the other side. Thanks to Fortune Feimster. I just love her. And I have a feeling a lot of you do as well. All right. Have a good one, everybody. All my best. Hope people that you love are well as you. Take it easy.
Unexpected trouble? CashNet USA can take the stress out of borrowing emergency funds. Our fast, secure application process makes it easy to apply online 24/7. Plus, CashNet USA offers same-day funding if approved before 10:30 a.m. Central Time, Monday through Friday. Additional terms may apply. Visit CashNetUSA.com or tap the banner to apply today.